Hey, Basic Folk Buddies. I want to tell you about a podcast I really love called Broken Record. Each week, hosts Justin Richman and Leah Rose sit down for in-depth conversations with musicians from all kinds of genres and generations. You'll hear artists like Smokey Robinson, Billy Corgan, St. Vincent, Damon Albarn, Daryl Hall, and John Oates, and many more as they open up about their creative lives and the stories behind their most meaningful work. If you're a music fan, I highly recommend checking out Broken Record, where real musicians have real conversations. Hi, and welcome to Basic Folk, where we have honest conversations with folk musicians on the bluegrass situation. I'm your host, Cindy Howes, and welcome to episode one of 2026. We have Mary Chapin Carpenter on the podcast today. Very excited about this conversation with our new bestie. Before we get into that, let's talk about Basic Folk's newsletter. It is my New Year's resolution to start sending out the Basic Folk newsletter again. It's a once a month email, comes into your inbox and lets you know who's been on the podcast recently, who's coming up, and all of our thoughts and feelings, which of course you're gonna wanna know, right? Okay. So you can sign up for the Basic Folk newsletter at the link in the show notes, or you can go to basicfolk.com and sign up there. And thanks. You can also follow us on social media. We are at Basic Folk Pod on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. We're a listener-supported podcast. We did not do a fundraiser this past Christmassy time, but if you are a contributor, thank you so much. You really are helping to keep the train on the tracks. If you would like to help out, you can throw us a couple of bucks every month. You can find the link to donate in the show notes or go to basicfolk.com/donate. Okay, Mary Chapin Carpenter. Mary Chapin Carpenter's latest album, Personal History, is as lush in production and color as the beautiful farmland she calls home in Virginia. Carpenter will often wake up early for sunrise walks with her dog Angus and one of several daily cups of coffee, of course, to start the day. She reflects on how living on this serene farmhouse has brought her peace, drawing parallels to Carl Sandburg's creative hush. Mary Chapin discusses her method of song walking as a tool to overcome writer's block, often accompanied by a dog or a cat. She touches on her evolving relationship with fame and the importance of surrounding herself with grounded people. Carpenter also reveals her shy younger self and how being less concerned with others' opinions has empowered her over time. She speaks about her connection to the Celtic music community and how that inspired her collaborative album Looking for the Thread with Scottish musicians Julie Fowlis and Corinne Polward. That record was her first with Josh Kaufman as producer, and it worked out so well, she decided to have him produce on her new solo album, Personal History. We also reflect on hyphen gate due to her double first name, Mary Chapin, the process of feeling visible and valued, and the impact of Elizabeth Strout on her perspective of songwriting. We'll take a listen to a song from Mary Chapin's latest album, Personal History. Here's Girl and Her Dog, and then we'll get to our conversation with Mary Chapin Carpenter on Basic Folk.
Comes to love, and I hoped it would never run dry. Riding covered through all, there was no time to stall, but still I kept wanting to try. Truth is, I've always gone down with the ship. I've never known when it's time to quit. It's defiant as well as defender. I'm a bitter ender.
Mary Chapin, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm so pleased to be speaking with you. You like are somebody that never met in my life, but it feels like you're just like instant friend buddy.
Oh, that makes me feel really good. Thank you so much for saying that.
Yeah. So I know that you love two things unconditionally, coffee and dogs.
That's true.
What is your history with coffee and your history with dogs, and where do they intersect?
Oh my gosh. Well, I'll tell you that just 2 mornings ago, I woke up super early, like 3 in the morning, which happens occasionally. And I know enough at this point in life not to sit there and toss and turn. It's like, oh, it's 3 o'clock. So what? I'll just get up, you know, and have my first cup of coffee. Anyway, the intersection of dogs and coffee came at about 6:30, 7 a.m. when I walked up to the top of my hill with my dog, Angus, with my probably like fourth cup of coffee at that point. But there's something so lovely about being up early, being outside with your dog and nature and the sun coming up and a cup of coffee in your hand. And it just, you know, it was a really beautiful start for the day of the day with Angus and Java. And other than that, as far as there being any more obvious intersection, I don't know what it would be.
So. I do love the outdoor early morning coffee.
Yes.
There is nothing like it.
It was really nice. It was really nice.
You live in a farmhouse in Virginia, and you'll sometimes post pictures of your land, oftentimes very early, like we're just talking about.
Yeah.
How long have you lived on this farm, and how do you think this place has changed you? Like, what have you discovered about yourself because of where you live?
Oh, my. Well, I have to say, I always think about this quote that I first read when I visited Carl Sandburg's home place in North Carolina, outside of, I believe it was Flat Rock, North Carolina, where it was the last place that he lived. His wife raised goats. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful farmstead. And there's like a, you know, a visitor center there. And I remember reading this quote from him. He would talk about what he called the creative hush of this beautiful place where he lived, and that it inspired his work as a poet. And when I read that, I remember thinking, oh, that's exactly how I feel about where I live. It's just a particularly beautiful place. It's just very serene. It's very sustaining in a way. And I don't know how it's changed me, or I just know that it's brought a great deal of peace and serenity and comfort to me in my life. And I feel endlessly grateful that I get to live here. And just stating the obvious to me is just, I love to work at my kitchen table, and that's where I write. And the creative hush is real. It's just a really beautiful, inspiring place in that way.
You've talked about song walking, using that as a tool when you hit a block in your writing, you get stuck, you grab the nearest dog or cat, I guess you have a cat that walks with you, and go for a walk and work out the songs. And it seems like you are walking a lot, not just song walking, but walking. So who taught you the value of a good walk?
I don't know if anyone taught it to me. It's just something that certainly when I moved here, it's an area of Virginia that has a lot of, I don't know precisely the reason why, but there's a lot of gravel roads, beautiful old pre-revolutionary stone walls. It's a very rural area. And there's just every day you can pick another road, a different road to walk down. And there's not a lot of cars, obviously. And so it's a real great alternative to a treadmill. You know, I have to admit, when I go to the gym and I jump on a machine, I feel kind of blank in my head. But when I'm walking on these roads or walking on my own property or whatever, I just feel so much more engaged with where I am, how I am. I have a lot of thoughts as I go. Song walking, yes, you've talked about that. Just riffing out loud, songs that I'm working on, figuring out solutions to lyrics, that sort of thing. Yeah, so it's just, it's a productive thing as well as a meditative thing.
Are you ever listening to anything or is it just?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I listen, I'm a bit of a podcast addict, but I also love to just listen to music as I'm walking. Mm-hmm. And but quite often it's just silence. It's just being in the world, in nature. Yeah.
You're someone who has experienced the spotlight and has spoken about the uneasy relationship with all the attention. Mm-hmm. And you say surrounding yourself with grounded people is how you have navigated fame. Mm-hmm. How did you come to that conclusion? And what was like the journey like in that lesson?
Oh my goodness. I don't know if I, it's not like I woke up one day and said, oh, I have a method to navigate this craziness, but rather I just, you know, I was fortunate that I already had really lovely, sane, smart, supportive people around me. And when things would get tough in terms of just the exhaustion of keeping up with the white hot light of attention or whatever it was, I always had the support of the people around me to help me figure it out or encourage me to take time off or whatever it was that was needed in that moment.
Do you think it was just luck that good people were around you, or were you particularly good at identifying grounded people?
I think it was a little of both. I mean, I certainly think it was lucky for sure that I, you know, had those supportive folks, but at a certain point you can tell when someone who is working with you, if they kind of get it or if they don't, and if they don't, they tend to peel off, you know? So I think luck plays a big part.
The telltale sign of like flipping a switchblade, maybe, or like showing you watches inside their jacket.
Or just not providing a whole lot of wisdom. You know, it's just at a certain point, your gut knows. You just know that. And if anything, you know, it's at a certain point, it's like you want to be loyal to the people who you know are working hard for you, around you, and you don't want to take anyone for granted, and you certainly don't want to feel taken for granted either. But at a certain point, I think your instinct, you just know that this is a relationship that is worth continuing or not. No.
You've described your younger self as a shy person without a whole lot of confidence. Mm-hmm. Where do you see that younger version of yourself now? Like, does she ever show up?
Oh, she's still there. Yeah. Yeah. I just have always been on the shy side, and, you know, confidence is something that is built and nurtured and, you know, evolves, I guess, as you get older. And I certainly think that as I've gotten older, I think one of the gifts, if you will, of growing older is at a certain point, you just don't give a shit anymore. You don't care as much as you used to. And I think that's the wisdom of aging and the gift of it as well, that the things that made you feel insecure or lacking in confidence as a younger person just no longer resonate. It just doesn't matter as much anymore. And you're able to just let it go. I know that sounds a bit woo-woo, but it's the truth, you know?
We love woo-woo here.
Good. I mean, it's like, that's the thing. You hear people talk about, I wish I could tell my younger self, blah, 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 whatever it is. And what I would tell my younger self would be like, don't care so much what other people think and don't feel like you're not being true to yourself if something makes you uncomfortable, you know?
So, yeah. Again, the gut.
Totally.
It's important. Yeah. I've heard you say songwriting is the most comfortable way to tell your story. Why do you think that is? Like, what is it about the delivery of a song that allows you to express yourself?
Well, first of all, I think you're allowed a range of mystery. You don't have to spell everything out. You can be impressionistic. There's so many ways to describe something, or there's you know, cryptic ways of delivering a feeling or an emotion. It's just, there's just many different ways, I guess, to go about expressing yourself.
Yeah.
And some of my most favorite songs are songs that I would say are fairly cryptic or mystical. I don't, by other artists, for example, you know, certain songs by REM, for example, it's like, I don't necessarily need to know what Michael Stipe was exactly referring to or thinking or being inspired by in X song. But I know that when I hear it, it evokes just beautiful feelings or passion or sadness, or I put a certain song on because it helps me like ball like a baby, and that's what I need to do at that moment, you know?
Yeah.
I don't need to know precisely what the writer intended. It just, I just know how it affects me.
Yeah. I love that description, especially in thinking like, I'm also a pretty shy person. So when I'm trying to tell a story and an anxious person, I get like overwhelmed by like the anxiety and the fear. And then like the story doesn't make sense. And I'm like, but it makes sense up here.
Right. Exactly.
Try writing a song, I guess.
Yeah.
You were on Shiro's with Carmel this year. And if anyone listening has not heard that, run, don't walk to your podcast feed. That was so great.
Oh.
Such an incredible episode.
She's wonderful. She's so easy to talk to. And
yeah,
she, I just felt so, so much in conversation with someone. And
yeah,
you know, it's never, it's not always like that. I know you understand this. It's like some interviews just don't feel that way.
And this was a special one.
Yeah. And
I feel like you should share it in your podcast feed. That was my idea for you.
You know what? I'll take you up on that.
It's so good. So you and Carmel were talking about many different things, mm-hmm. but one of the things you were talking about that I really loved, you were talking about living as a single woman mm-hmm. with dogs. Mm-hmm. And you said something, and I'm paraphrasing here, in solitude, there is sustenance. And in loneliness, I learn a lot, which I loved. How do you distinguish these two states of mind? And historically, how have each felt for you?
Well, I don't you think it's probably the case where, I don't mean to simplify it too much, but it's like, there are certain things, you know it when you see it, or you know it when you feel it, kind of thing. It's like solitude, the difference between solitude and loneliness. It's sometimes it's hard to tease them apart, but it's like, you know it when you feel it, that you're like in solitude. I think I can find myself getting lost in whatever I'm working on. And I'm just really energized, or like, I'm just not even thinking about where I am or what I'm doing. I'm just focused on if it's writing a song or working on a writing project or something. It just feels like I'm reveling in my solid, in my aloneness.
Mm.
And then loneliness tends to be, I think, accompanied by sometimes pain and yearning, like a yearning that just feels like an ache, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's just the, maybe there's a lot of layers to that onion, and that's just the first layer of how you distinguish between the two. But I don't know. I think it's just, you just know the difference when you're in either of those two situations.
Hmm. Your work goes really deep on feelings and life experiences. Hmm. Because of that, I was surprised to hear that you can be very, very silly.
Oh, yes.
I guess I shouldn't be too surprised, since you get along so well with Rose Cousins.
Oh, God.
Who is like one of the silliest.
She's the best.
Where does your irreverent side come from? How does it show up in your writing? How does it impact your creativity?
I don't know where it comes from. I guess it's just, you know, it's release. But also, you know, when you bring up Rose, for example, she just brings out the humor in me or in anyone. I mean, she's just a master of funny things. She sings to you. She sings your life back at you. You know, if you've ever experienced that. And, And right, the minute she does that, I am on the floor just howling. I love her dearly. And she frees me up. So I think it's about maybe being around people who are just so funny and cool and amazing that way. And you just stop feeling self-conscious. And it's like all your filters are just gone. You know, you can't help but just be there.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know though if it makes its way into my music. I mean, I have some songs I vaguely remember where I, you know, threw a profanity in or whatever didn't mean to be serious or whatever. But I don't know. I just think there's, you know, there's the me that writes songs and is trying to be serious and, you know, just puts it out there. And then there's the me that is howling on the floor at Rose Cousins. And they're the same person, though.
Right. I wonder if the song walks ever get pretty silly.
Oh, my God. Well, when I'm yelling at my dog to stop eating a tree, maybe.
Yeah. It'd be so great if you don't have like a Patreon or anything. It would be so great to record your song walks and like release the tapes.
Oh, God. I don't know. I think I might put people to sleep, but we'll see.
We'll see. We could. I mean, if you do enough of them, you can make a super cut.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's talk about your name.
Oh, okay.
Mary Chapin Carpenter.
Yes.
Chapin was your father's name.
That's right.
In 1987, Columbia Records hyphenated your first name, Mary hyphen Chapin, to let people know that it was one first name. Mm-hmm. Then the hyphens started migrating, mm-hmm. and suddenly there were two hyphens, and then you were like, that's it, I'm dropping this.
Yeah.
In the 90s, yeah. You just became Mary Chapin Carpenter.
Yeah.
How do you reflect on hyphen gate now? And also, how have you come to relate to your name? Like, how do you feel about your name?
Well, just to explain it. So, like you say, Chapin was my father's first name. My mother was originally from the South. And, you know, there's a tradition of double first names in the South. My mother's name was Mary Bowie. And so when I was born, I became Mary Chapin. And it's a double first name. Grew up, yada-da-da-da. And then when I was signed to Sony and started making record, it was just constant. I would go places, people call me Mary. And I'd say, actually, it's Mary Chapin. And it just was endlessly exhausting to explain it. And even when I would explain it, people would still call me Mary. And it just kind of drove us all bonkers. So that was the first idea was, oh, let's just put a hyphen between Mary and Chapin. Just pause for a second. I remember playing a venue where there was an announcer. It was actually the beautiful stage at the Kennedy Center. And the announcer said, please welcome Mary Chapin and the Carpenters.
Oh, awesome. That was great to perform with the Carpenters.
How inventive can it get? And then a few years later, there was someone reviewed a show we played and it said Mary hyphen Chapin hyphen Carpenter in the print review. And that was the point at which I was like, oh, for fuck's sake, this is done. You know, I cannot do this anymore. This is so stupid. And that's when I went back to the record label and said, you know, remove the hyphens, you know. But again, it just depends on who you're, you know, I have to tell everybody and I don't mind it so much anymore. But I do know it is a tip off when someone says, Mary, I just know they don't know who I am. You know, it's just a tip off.
Okay. Yeah, like a little filter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Names are tough. I do not like my name.
You don't like your name?
No, I don't.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. My wife and I just had a baby, so we had to name a human. Thank you.
Yeah.
And we thought it was going to be a boy. We didn't find out. So we had all these like boy names vetted. Guess what? It was not a boy.
Oh my goodness.
It's a girl.
Oh my goodness.
So I think we did pretty well.
Right.
But it is a lot of pressure. Like I've named dogs, cats, right. Rabbits, sheep, goats.
Yeah.
This was the big one.
Well, I hear you. I can't imagine having a new little human and having to bestow upon it the name for the rest of their life. You know, I mean, granted, yes. I suppose after they're 18, they legally can change it. But,
yeah,
you know, I'm I understand.
Yeah. Well, I don't dislike my name enough to change it. That sounds like a lot of paperwork.
But yeah.
Our baby's name is Frances Marie. Like, very classic.
I think that's beautiful.
Thank you. We call her Francie.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. That's great.
Yeah. I love talking to people about how they feel about their names. And then I get to talk about how I don't like mine. Just kidding.
Right. No, and just when I was a little kid and there was this show on television where one of the characters was Mary Ann, I remember harassing my parents. I mean, I was like six or something, but just saying, I want to change my name to Mary Ann. I hate Mary Chapin. It's like, and they were like, no. And I couldn't understand why they wouldn't let me do it. I understand now, but at the time it was like, you're being mean.
Right. Totally.
Yeah.
Man, Mary Chapin is a rad name, though.
Thank you.
I'm glad they didn't change it. I'm glad they didn't listen to you.
Me too. Now I love my name, but it took me a while.
Yeah. Okay, I wanted to talk about the two albums that you released in 2025. First, Looking for the Thread with the Scottish artist Julie Fowlis and Corinne Polwart.
Yes.
You first met, I think, I don't, okay. So you and Julie did the Transatlantic Sessions in 2013. And then Corinne, perhaps you met at the Celtic Connections in Glasgow.
Well, Julie and I had, you know, met a few different times, Transatlantic Sessions and Celtic Connections and all that sort of thing. She's, you know, just a legend in Scottish traditional music. I mean, she's amazing. Her singing is, and her creative work is just over the top. And then Corinne is someone who I have just been a total fangirl of for years. And she's also just in traditional and folk music in Scotland in particular, she's just this giant, you know, she's just, they're both such beautiful and deep artists. And it was around the time of the pandemic. Well, I'd had this idea for a long time, actually. I just felt like the one thing I hadn't really done a whole lot of in my working life had been to collaborate with people. And when you do have a chance to do that, you just come away learning, feeling like you've learned so much. And it's the fellowship alone is just worth everything. Cause you know, we go out there and we do all this stuff essentially alone, or if we're lucky, we have a band and a crew, but that's when you know you're lonely, you know, it's when you're on the road a lot and it can be really hard. Anyway, long story short, I just started thinking about the idea of doing a project sort of from the ground up. And I just reached out to them both, and lucky for me, they were into it. And so we had a couple of writing retreats over the course of like 2 years, roughly. And then we engaged the superlative Josh Kaufman to be our musical guide and our creative professor. And he helped us sort of pull this unwieldy thing of three different people and different lanes and different songs and all that sort of thing. And he pulled it all together and we were able to make this record, which I'm just deeply proud of and so fond of. And in so many ways, it's because of Julie and Corinne and their incredible gifts that make it they illuminate life for me.
Yeah. It seems like you have kind of been part of that Glasgow transatlantic scene for a while now. So the Transatlantic Sessions is a Glasgow-based concert series and recording sessions that features musicians from both sides of the Atlantic. So you were part of Series 6 back in 2013 with Julie. So how has being in that circle of Celtic musicians impacted your own musicality?
Well, I just, you know, from the time I remember, I've just always loved traditional music, Celtic music, folk music forever. And when I started going over there and being a part of Celtic Connections or Transatlantic Sessions or meeting a lot of those artists, and even before that, years before that, going over and touring in Ireland and being around Paul Brady and Sharon Shannon and all these, you know, giants of traditional music. And I mean, but Paul Brady is rock and roll too. But anyway, there's just, it just fills your tank. You know, you just feel so inspired, and it's exciting and thrilling and full of learning to be in musical environments that you're just not used to. It's just such a gift to be able to experience that. So I've just always had a thing for Celtic music and traditional music. And I mean, I'm not a scholar of it, but I just know it moves me deeply.
Mm. You were mentioning that Looking Through for the Thread was produced by Josh Kaufman, who also produced your latest album, Personal History.
Yes.
He's the best. You've called him the most open-hearted person I've met, which Josh has this, like, he was on the podcast earlier in 2025, mm-hmm. and we were talking, I was like trying to get him to answer questions about like, why are you so great? He has this like friendly enthusiasm. Like, it's just enough friendly mm-hmm. where it's like, if you're talking about how you kind of feed off of other people's energies, like, he's a great person. He just sends this like positive, beautiful, friendly enthusiasm, and you can just like make an amazing connection with him.
Yes.
How does Josh elevate your songs? What made you want to work with him twice in a row? Are you going to continue to work with him?
Well, Looking for the Thread with Julian Crean, that was the first time that I ever worked with Josh. We had met previously for a nanosecond at a festival, but I mean, I knew who he was. And
you don't forget Josh.
You don't forget him. And he, you know, has been a part of some really favorite records of mine, you know, of other people's. Anyway, so after the experience over at Real World in England, making the record with Julian Crean and Josh, it was such a positive experience. And at that point, I knew I was sort of having to figure out what I was going to do next for my own next record. And I just, again, it's like, I just wanted to keep working with him because I just felt really heard. I felt encouraged. You know, all the things that you really want someone in the producer's chair to provide you with. I mean, everybody's relationship with a producer is different, whatever that looks like. You know, I just knew for myself, his encouragement and his belief in me and his approach, his kindness, his care, his, you know, he's involved in everything. And at the same time, he's not a dictator. He's encouraging everyone in the room to feel it, to figure out what they want to bring as well. I know that may sound somewhat vague, but I think you know what I mean. It's just, he encourages an atmosphere of experimentation, taking chances, not being afraid to say, I don't think this works, let's try something else. You know, it just feels excellent. And it feels efficient, and it feels, but there's always time to try something else. It's just a beautiful atmosphere. So that's why I wanted to work with him again.
And then are you going to work with him one more time? Many more times?
If he'll have me.
Okay, here's the call, Josh.
Josh, please say yes again.
You're listening.
Yes.
So both of these records were recorded at Peter Gabriel's Real World Studios in Bath, England. I think you've made four records
yes.
there.
Mm-hmm.
I went to England once and I was like, whatever, England. And then I got there, I was like, wow, this is crazy. Bath was like a consideration for a stop, but we didn't have time.
Oh, too bad.
To get there. So I just was wondering if you could tell me what your impression of Bath was.
Well, Bath is about 6 miles out past where Real World is. Real World is in a tiny village called Box, B-O-X. Oh. And about 6 miles past Box, you'll come into the city of Bath, which is, you know, one of the UNESCO's, you know, places of the world. It's extraordinarily beautiful and historic. It's like, it has these bridges over the river where it looks like you're in Venice in a way. And it's surrounded by these gentle undulating hills, green hills. It's so beautiful. It's hard to describe. But there's so much history there. You know, Jane Austen lived there for a little while. And you can, you know, you just walk the streets and you know, bear with me, but you can close your eyes for a second and feel like you're just being transported back hundreds of years. I mean, it's looked the same, you know, that kind of thing, except for perhaps the coffee shops. but it's just, you know, I just love working at Real World, first of all, because it's a residential studio. You can spend, you know, you can stay there when you're working. So as you can imagine, the how great it feels to just be able to just totally immerse yourself in what you're doing while you're there. They feed you incredible meals. They tuck you in at night. I mean, it's just...
Turn down service, chocolate on the pillow.
It's such a vibe. It's such a beautiful vibe there. And, you know, so I've just been very, very fortunate to make all these records there. And it's hard not to want to just do everything there because it's such, yeah. It nurtures you from, you know, the word go. It's wonderful.
Oh, great.
Yeah. And when you do have some time off, then you just go into Bath, walk the streets in a good way, and, and, you know, just take in the beauty of where you are. And it just, it's a treat. It's a total privilege and a treat.
I think I was like, we're not going there because they don't let you in the baths anymore. You can only look at them.
No, you can take baths.
Oh, you can?
Yes,
right.
You can.
All right. Well, that was a mistake. One of my life mistakes.
It's the thermal thing. You have more time in your life. You can still do it.
Okay. When considering your songs, you've shared that the book My Name is Lucy Barton revealed a revelation. So in the book, a writing teacher says to their student, you will only have one story. You will write your one story in many ways.
Yes.
So you were just like,
exactly.
How did absorbing that fact, I'm sure it changed a lot of things, but I'm wondering, like, how did it change your relationship to your songs?
Well, not to get too tidy with you, but on my most recent record, Personal History, the titular song is called What Did You Miss? And at the last verse of that song, there's this line where it says, I've been walking in circles for so long, unwinding the mystery. I've been writing it down song by song as a personal history. And that lyric is sort of speaking to what I feel like it's been my life's work to write all of these songs. They all come from so many different places. It's like that instructor said, you have one story, but you write it so many different ways. And I felt like when I read that passage in My Name is Lucy Barton, it was like this moment of recognition of, oh, and I said this out loud as I was reading with that book on my lap saying, oh, that's what the songs are. It's as if, I don't know why, you know, it just felt like all my life writing songs, what I was really doing was telling my own story, but I'd never quite articulated it to myself that way. But seeing that as part, when Elizabeth Strout wrote that in her novel, it's like it explained it to me somehow.
Mm.
And then when I was finishing Personal History or the song, What Did You Miss? It's like I was declaring for myself, you know, songwriting is my way of telling my own story. And while that may seem very obvious or simplistic almost, sometimes it just, you get caught up in your own head too much, or things just don't seem that simple. And sometimes you think you're writing to be cathartic, and sometimes you're writing because you're angry, and sometimes you're writing just to get something out or to try to banish some bad emotion or, you know, whatever. But when all is said and done, that's the way you tell your story. That's the way I've told my story. And I'm still telling it, and I intend to continue to tell it, even though that it's like one of the things I said to Carmel was, you know, the last song on the record is a song called Coda, appropriately. Mm-hmm. But it's not meant to be an ending. It's meant to be continued. And I look forward to whatever the future holds.
Josh Kaufman, if you're listening, give us a call.
Yes.
All right. Girl and Her Dog. Mm. That song inspired by a woman you saw driving a vintage truck one morning, a badass lady. Mm-hmm. You realized at some point you were looking for mentors and examples of how to navigate this new season of life. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, that lady is my example. And then you're like, wait, I might be her. And you felt inspired and just revved up. Mm-hmm. Mary Chapin, we call this feeling yourself. Mm-hmm. It can be a very fleeting feeling. Mm. That type of thing. So yeah. How do you try to maintain that feeling of being the woman in the truck?
Well, I guess I don't maintain it all. I mean, there are times when I feel like I have lapsed, shall we say. I don't know about you, but some days I feel like I'm a badass and other days I feel like I'm a loser of all time. You know, just it's just a fact. It's just sometimes you just feel like you've got it by the tail and other times you just feel like I don't understand anything and I'm just not making sense. But again, the wisdom of growing older is to be able to navigate those feelings and those days and just come out eventually feeling better. Mm. You know, it's just, I was casting about at that time looking for mentors. I was growing, you know, I turned 60 and I was trying to figure out who am I and what am I doing and, you know, what's coming next and am I happy or am I sad and why? And, did, you know, just all the questions. And seeing her and sort of making up this life as I did as I was walking along as she drove past me, I started thinking about what her life was like. And maybe she's an artist and maybe she's like having another cup of coffee in her garden. And maybe she's, you know, there she is in her cool pickup truck. Maybe she's a painter. You know, it's just like I made up all these things about her. And I realized that what I was making up for her was this very creative life and one that was just rich and resonating. And I realized sort of after the fact that what I was making up was the life I wanted for myself. And that's why I was relating to what I was seeing in her and or imagining rather what I was seeing. And it's just, you know, you don't want to feel invisible in this world. You want to feel like you're making a difference and you want to feel like, and a lot of women, for example, who I know who are older have said to me, you know, when they turned a certain age, they just started to feel invisible in the world. And I remember thinking, that's bullshit. That's crazy. I mean, it's not bullshit to them, but it's just, that's just ridiculous that life treats us that way. And yet I started to understand it. I started to feel it myself. And I just wanted to push back against that because we all have so much to offer, you know, no matter where we are in our lives, no matter who we are. And anyway, that's a really long-winded answer to your question.
Sorry, we got lots of tape.
Okay.
In 2024, you hosted the podcast Hope is a Muscle, where you interviewed Joan Baez, Adrian Mishler, John Darnell, and Jamie Raskin. Mm-hmm. So you are someone who has been interviewed many, many, many times. Mm-hmm. What do you like about being on the other side of the mic?
Oh, gosh. I love not being on the spot. In that particular series of interviews, all four of those people are all so different and they have had remarkable lives and they continue, each one of them, to give the world something really positive, in my opinion. And so first of all, it was a privilege to speak to each and every one of them. That they made the time. But second of all, I feel like they had a lot of wisdom to impart to the listener. And, you know, I'm not the greatest interviewer at all, but they made it easy because their answers and their thoughtfulness and their generosity in expressing their feelings just made my job piece of cake, you know?
Yeah.
I just had to sit there and take it in.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, Mary Chapin, before I let you go, will you do the lightning round?
I'd be happy to. Oh my God, I'm scared. Shit.
Okay. How many pairs of shoes are you bringing on tour?
Three.
What are they?
Gig boots, sneakers, and slippers. That's it.
I feel like the community is trying to get that number down to two.
Well, I feel like I've gotten it down to a science. I mean, I could probably not bring the slippers, but it's just comfy stuff for the bus, mm-hmm. you know?
Right.
I could get away with just gig boots and sneakers, but I had some room to squash the slippers in.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is the best gas station snack?
Skittles.
All right.
Okay.
The correct answer is pickle in a bag.
Oh, God. It's great. Okay.
What are you listening to on a long drive?
Choral music.
Oh, all right.
I am a choral music junkie, and wow. I can't get enough of it. I never will be able to get enough of it. It's the most beautiful thing on the planet. There you go. And it doesn't have to be, you know, sacred. It's just beautiful choral music.
Awesome. Where does the dog sleep?
I have asked him to sleep on the bed, but he just isn't interested.
So okay, he's, Angus.
So I have a chair in my bedroom. He likes to sleep on the chair, but he goes between the chair and his bed that's on the floor.
Okay.
Yeah.
Polite. This is the last one.
Okay.
What color is your soul?
Purple.
Ah, great. Great answer.
The color of passion and royalty.
Ah. Awesome. Mary Chapin, that's it. Thank you so much for talking to me.
Oh my gosh. I love talking to you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Of course. This episode of Basic Folk was produced by Anthony Cabrera. Dietrich Strauss composes our music. Basic Folk is a production of The Bluegrass Situation. You can find all of our episodes there. You can stream us on folkalley.com or Folk Alley's mobile app. You can search for Basic Folk on SiriusXM's mobile app. You can go to basicfolk.com, or you can listen wherever you get your shows. If you enjoyed this episode, we suggest sharing it with a friend, like maybe that friend who is really into watercolors and painting sunrises and needs a soundtrack to paint along to, then they can get to know Mary Chapin, and then they'll realize that her music is like the perfect music to accompany sunrise watercolor painting to. Send it to that friend. Okay, thanks for listening. Happy New Year. We'll talk to you next time. Bye.